It's our crest, our coat of arms, and what it means to wear it.
Binsky will take it, tap it ahead for Nudibara, out to the neutral zone, finding Foligno.
It's when we dig deep.
Foligno's got help on the rush.
At the right moment.
And he drops it back for Dubinsky, over to Savard. He shoots and scores!
It's our blue, and out of our blue, we rise.
Head to BlueJackets.com for tickets, news, and more.
Sports Desk at the Columbus Dispatch presents the Buckeye Extra Basketball Podcast.
With your host, Ohio State basketball beat writer Adam Jardy.
Now, the Buckeye Extra Basketball Podcast.
The Buckeye Extra Podcast is brought to you by Rosati Windows, Central Ohio's number one replacement window company.
Hello, everyone. This is Adam Jardy from the Columbus Dispatch. Today is Thursday, October 29th, 2020, and it's my official duty to welcome you into episode 162 of the Buckeye Extra Men's Basketball Podcast. Welcome to Jubilation City. Welcome to a new piece of equipment we're introducing into the podcast here. I've got a brand new microphone that I'm trying out for the first time. So let me know what you think about how this podcast sounds compared to the other ones that you're used to hearing me put together. I'm trying this out. The Patrick the Podfather, Patrick Flaherty, helped us all get some new audio equipment, and hopefully this makes your listening experience all the more enjoyable. Can't do anything about my voice, but maybe I can at least make it sound a little bit clearer. So here we go. So we're plugging along on the precipice of November, and you know what that means? As of recording, we're less than 4 weeks from the official start to the college basketball season. And to mark that occasion and refresh us who's on the roster, our annual preseason power rankings are being rolled out daily on weekdays on Buckeye Extra. So make sure you're looking for that. We'll talk about that more later. We'll also talk later about a new series that will begin next week on Buckeye Extra, as well as a loss to the Central Ohio basketball community. That will all be in the third segment of this episode. But segment two will feature some intel from a pair of current players. This week, I caught up with junior forward slash wing slash, I guess not really guard, but wing, Justin Arnes, and fourth year junior Justice Suing, for stories on each of them that will be written and will be available on Buckeye Extra in the coming days. But we're going to get into all the things that we talked about. In segment two, we'll break down my conversations with them, sort of where they stand entering the season, and why Chris Holtman and I specifically discussed each of them the last time that the coach and I spoke. And if you listened to last week's episode of the podcast, I spent a lot of time breaking down our conversation, but I kind of held on to some things that will still be parceled out here over the next couple of days. And among them were conversations that we had about these two guys and why I think they're both going to be really important to what Ohio State's going to do this season. So we're going to get into all of that here in segment two of the podcast. Right now, as of this moment, we still don't have a Big Ten schedule, but all indications remain that it's going to be a 20-game league schedule. I actually spoke with women's basketball coach Kevin McGuff earlier this morning. I will have at least one or two women's basketball stories here in the next few days, and he said that their schedule is going to be 20 Big Ten games, which if they're going to do that for the women, then that's what they're going to do for the men. So I would expect something concrete on that to happen, hopefully before too long. I did receive my annual request to be a voter for the official Big Ten media poll. So things are starting to percolate there. I would imagine that there'd be maybe they announce at the same time, like all conference or preseason awards and things like that. Maybe they announce that at the same time as a conference schedule. But surely if they're working on one, then the other one can't be too far down the line. So hopefully we're getting a little bit closer to all of that. And yes, in case you're wondering, the unofficial media poll that's conducted jointly by myself and Brendan Quinn over at The Athletic is in the process of being compiled as well. So requests have been sent out, ballots are being sent in. We'll start tabulating all that stuff, and we'll have it all for you. Probably about mid-November, I'll give you warnings on that as we get closer to it. So there's things happening. We're getting closer and closer to Ohio State opening against Memphis on November 25th in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, at the Sanford Pentagon. Also this morning, on Thursday morning, I should say, which I guess is this morning, CBS's John Rothstein posted on Twitter that he had spoken with NCAA Senior Vice President of Basketball Dan Gavitt, who said that the recent COVID-19 spikes everywhere have influenced the NCAA's thoughts regarding putting the 2021 NCAA tournament in a bubble. Gavitt was asked about the CDC's mandatory 14-day quarantine if one player tests positive for COVID-19, and he said, quote, "We're hopeful that may evolve during this season. I don't anticipate that there's going to be a change before the season begins. If you are looking for positive news, there was a story Wednesday night on from Sports Illustrated indicating that the risk of heart disease for athletes who test positive for COVID might be significantly less than what was initially thought, which would be huge news. I know that was a primary concern among many coaches as the Big Ten was trying to figure out what to do as far as playing any sports, how they would handle the myocarditis risk. And maybe what we're finding out is that maybe it's not as big of a risk as initially intended, which, like I said, would obviously be fantastic news. I do want to throw out here that I did give a shout out last week to an unknown listener, someone who left a really kind review, and I didn't have their name, but I want to shout out Jared McLaughlin for the very kind review. He did get in touch with me, said he's a very loyal listener and just wanted me to know who he was. So I appreciate that, Jared. I appreciate you listening. I hope you're enjoying What's the Story Morning Glory, and let me know if I can further your journey down that oasis path anytime. I'm happy to offer whatever insight I can, which is plenty. I want to remind everyone else, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes by searching Buckeye Extra Basketball Podcast, and that way you won't miss an episode coming to you at least once a week, and that will pick up before too long because in roughly a month I should be in South Dakota and we'll have all kinds of things to talk about. We're obviously preparing for an unprecedented season after an unprecedented offseason, and things are going to be happening here rapidly in the next couple of weeks. So make sure you're subscribed, and if you would, please leave a 5-star rating, leave a favorable or a nice comment. Those things help with the algorithms and all the things I don't understand, and they help more people get to the podcast. So please subscribe, tell a friend, and maybe leave a nice review. That sort of stuff is very much appreciated. So up next, we're going to dive into my conversations with Justin Arns and Justice Suing. But first,
at Rosati Windows, staying competitive is really pretty easy because everything they do is personally inspected and done locally right here in Columbus, Ohio. They're a one-stop shop from the sales force to manufacturing of your windows and their 60,000 square foot facility to the installers and then the follow-up inspections, keeping it local and adding the personal touch. That's what has people consistently recommending Rosati Windows to their neighbors, family, and friends.
So Justice Suing is going to be a big part of this year's team. I think he's going to start. He's going to play a lot, and he's going to be asked to drive, to draw contact, and to be impactful offensively. So he was one of the people that I specifically spoke to Chris Holtman about when we had our conversation a little more than a week ago. And when I asked him about Justice, Holtman said he's going to be really important for us. He's practiced better and better with each day. He's really shown his ability in some of our early practices just as a 6'7" strong kid with ball skills. He's been able to make threes. He's been able to attack the paint. He told me he might be the best overall athlete on the team, that last year when they did sort of like a pro day type of thing, testing skills and athleticism and things like that, that it was Justice and DJ Carton were the two guys that tested out as the most athletic. So it would stand to reason he probably remains the most athletic now on this year's team. Holtman said that they hope to see him shoot in sort of the mid to upper 30s percentage wise from 3-point range. He was not a great 3-point shooter in his two seasons at Cal, where he averaged 31.1% as a freshman and 30.2% as a sophomore. He's been working with Ryan Peden on that. Justice said, quote, "I think I've improved a tremendous amount, especially being out for the months I was out. Being able to bounce back, we've been at it every day to make sure I stay disciplined and sound with my mechanics. I think it's really going to show off." He's an interesting kind of guy. I mean, he's from Hawaii. I played on the West Coast, obviously. And when he committed to Ohio State, one of the things that he told me was he had the option to basically he could either stay on the West Coast. He had off the top of my head, I can't remember what school it was, but there was someone out West that was interested in him, or he could try something new and go to the Midwest, somewhere that he'd really not spent any significant time in, and test himself, push himself in that manner. And that was a big part of the reason why he chose Ohio State. He wanted to get out of his comfort zone a little bit, to try something different. And as a result of that, he's fit in. And I think that, you know, there haven't been any issues as far as like a culture shock or anything like that. But it's interesting because he just seems to have a little bit of a different mindset, or maybe a different mentality. When Holtman was discussing him, he described him as, quote, "one of those guys where he's got a really laid back personality. He just kind of glides out on the floor, but he's a good athlete." He said when I asked him about that, he said that like guys will give him grief, like, you know, West Coast jokes and things like that. I said, do guys like tease you about like being from the West Coast, or from being from, you know, not being a Midwest guy or anything like that? And he said, hell yeah, they give me West Coast jokes. So, but he said it was all obviously, and it's all good mannered. And, you know, he feels really comfortable with his teammates and that it's kind of died down. He said, like, you know, he hasn't really even had to like resort to what I figured would be the ultimate comeback, which is just like, well, look at the weather. I mean, the dude's from Hawaii. He doesn't have to deal with, right now I'm looking out my window and it's like 45 degrees and we have a full day of rain. Like, he doesn't have to deal with that back in Hawaii. So I figured that would be sort of the ultimate comeback. But he said he hasn't really needed to resort to that too much. A big focal point for him is going to be his defense. Now, he played in primarily a 2-3 zone for a pretty bad Cal team, where defense wasn't really, it doesn't seem like it was emphasized that much, or definitely wasn't as big of a priority as it is in Chris Holtman's program. So that's something that we spoke about. And he told me that defensively, quote, "I felt that from the jump, that it was different. All the coaches were really on me because they make their little West Coast jokes here and there. But I mean, defensively, the Big Ten is one of the better defensive conferences in the country. So when I got here, I knew that was something I really wanted to work on as well and really sharpen, because I feel like that's a part of my game I really needed to improve. I let them know, I let my teammates know to push me and not take it easy on me. But it's definitely the base of how we play and how we want to get things done." I thought that was interesting that he described it as being the base of what they do, that to be successful at Ohio State and to play for Chris Holtman, defense, man, it's really important, and they really do emphasize it. And that's coming from a guy who has a lot of offensive gifts and could maybe just be coming in and thinking he's gonna score at the level that he did and offensively be the same player that he was. But it's obviously going to come in some different ways, and they're going to ask him to do some different things. And how well he can defend and switch is going to be very important for this Ohio State team, because they have so many guys who are 6'5", 6'6", 6'7", 6'8". And the more that you can switch and the more that you can sort of be positionless, that will really go a long way towards determining how successful this Ohio State team can be. So it's interesting to hear him talking about how he's working on that and how important that's going to be for his success this year. Big thing to point out with him, and this has been a talking point for some time now, but he's fully healthy now. Getting home to Hawaii was a little bit wild back in March when the whole world shut down. But so he suffered a Lisfranc injury, and I don't have any idea if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but last January-ish happened in practice. And that type of injury is, quote, "an injury of the foot in which one or more of the metatarsal bones are displaced from the tarsus." That's per Wikipedia, so you know that's definitely 100% accurate. But it was a foot injury, and not necessarily a super common foot injury. He did have to have a screw inserted in his foot as part of his recovery, and it took a while for him to get it removed. So I asked him like how it happened. Like, is it like something that happens in an instant, or is it something that sort of gradually, like maybe something wears down and the injury happens that way? And he said, quote, "it happened in an instant. It was real fast. At first, we didn't think it was too serious because of how it happened, but it ended up being a lot more. I just landed funny, and the way I moved, I forgot who was by me, but they kind of had a part of my foot clipped. So when I moved, it created that clean cut in my foot. Luckily, it was clean and it didn't mess with any other bones or anything like that. It was very precise, so that made the recovery a lot easier." In order for him, before he was set to go home, he needed to get the screw removed from his foot. And at the time he needed to have the screw removed from his foot, you could not get non-essential surgeries performed basically anywhere. So he was just kind of marooned in Central Ohio for, he said, like a week to 2 weeks. Once they got back from the canceled Big Ten tournament, everybody went home. But he couldn't go home because they were trying to get him to have the surgery done before he would go home. So he said that, like, it wasn't too big of a deal. He said, you know, I really couldn't do much anyway, so I just kind of laid around my apartment. That would have been the same just about anywhere. But he said that when he got home, basically right before Hawaii started requiring like a 14-day quarantine for anybody that was returning there from the mainland. And it was interesting. He pointed out that, like, because of sort of the culture back home, that, like, you see a lot of multi-generational families all living in the same household, that they had to really take it very seriously, because it would have been very easy for someone younger to, you know, like, pick up the virus, and then grandma or grandpa or someone probably lives in the house with them, and then that obviously becomes a very serious issue. So that's something that he said was different back home compared to here. But he said that obviously things had gotten better while he was home, and you know, they did quarantine and things like that, but that things did get better. He said that since that happened, he was doing a lot of, like, virtual consultation with, like, the team doctors and things, and working on exercises and things that he needed to do to get back to full health, which was a bit of a challenge because he was on his own, but he said he was able to get through it. Since he's gotten back to Ohio State, he said a lot of his skill workouts he's actually done with Justin Arnes, because they both work out with Ryan Peden. And that transitions me into that this could also be a real big season for Justin, because the top 2 3-point shooters from last season and Caleb and Andre Wesson are gone. And Justin has now had the benefit of basically a fully healthy offseason. It's really interesting to me that you see so often with guys that the biggest jump that they make is between their freshman and their sophomore seasons. I know I've talked about it on here, I've written about it, but that's when you have a full year in the program. You have a full off season in the strength and conditioning program, and that's where you see guys make those big jumps. Well, Justin didn't really have that opportunity last year because of the back injury he suffered last summer that essentially wiped out his off season and hampered him well into the regular season as well. So in a normal year, this would have been a huge off season for him. Because you would have, I think that freshman to sophomore growth, I think that's what we would have maybe seen from Justin going from sophomore to junior year. Now, obviously, that you have to curtail that a little bit because nobody had anything even close to a standard or typical offseason. But he was able to get a lot of work in. He said he had access back home in Versailles to a gym that was nearby. He has a weight room at his house. So he was able to do a lot of work on his own to help get himself into better shape. And they're going to need him to shoot this season. I mean, they have some guys in this roster that can make threes, but he's clearly the best pure shooter on the roster, and they need him to shoot at a high level. So when I asked him about that, about his shooting, he said, that's what I'm known for. He said, it's just something I've honestly been good at all my life. I know for me to stay on the floor, though, to be a 20-minute a game, 30-minute a game guy, I have to be able to defend. He said he's been working on things like counters, shot fake, and sidestep, things like that to combat like being run off the line because teams are going to run at him. They're going to try to force him not to get a shot off. So he said he's been watching a lot of film of himself playing defense. And I asked him, well, what did you – he sort of brought that up on his own. I said, well, when you watch yourself on film, what do you see? What have you been watching as you've been studying what you did last season? He said the last year, the biggest things I noticed are I was losing my vision here and there. Not a lot. But when I would get beat on defense, I'd be a second behind because I would turn my head and I'd turn my head back, or I'd be ball watching and I'd be a second behind on my closeout and I'd get driven by. So that was one thing. Another thing was coming out of my stance. Make sure I'm locked into the scouting reports, know who I'm guarding, what they do, and stay within my limits when I'm out there on defense. He did say some of the injuries that he dealt with, or some of the issues that he dealt with rather, were a little bit injury related, that his mobility wasn't where he would like it to be and where it could be. Sounds like those concerns are in the past. He seems fully healthy and ready to go. He's talking about, you know, being a 20-minute a game guy, a 30-minute a game guy. And if he can be out there and stretch the court with his shooting ability, that opens up obviously so much on a team where there are some questions about where the bulk of the offense might come from. He said, or when I asked Chris Holtman about that, he said his shooting and his floor spacing and then just his understanding of how to play the game, I think it's really important and going to be important for our team. I think for him, we've got to get him getting it off a little quicker so he can have a few more attempts. But I go back to last year, and certainly he played in a complementary role. And this year, I would expect his minutes to be more consistent, hopefully. I do think there's some things we'll probably run for him a little more this year, but he'll be critical when it comes to that. He's been consistently our best shooter at every drill throughout the summer. Him and Dwayne have been neck and neck. I asked Justin about his shooting mechanics and what goes into trying to get a shot off a little bit quicker, because it's not just as easy as I think maybe the average person might think. I remember having great conversations with John Diebler when he was at Ohio State about mechanics and follow through and like just jumping straight up and down, not fading in one direction or the other. So when I asked Justin about that, he said there's a difference between being a good shooter and an elite shooter. The mechanics of going into getting your shot off quicker, for me, it's just staying low on the catch, always being ready. That's one thing the coaches have been harping on me this season. No matter where you are on the floor, always be ready for the ball. You've got to hunt your shot. You're a shooter. If nobody's there to close out on you, you've got to let it fly. That's what I do at a high level. I've got to continue to improve and be more consistent with it this season. And finally, to wrap this all up, and like I said, there'll be more of this that will be on the web, so please read it there. I don't want to just necessarily put everything on the podcast, but he did shout out Kyle Young for his increased confidence shooting the three. And it's sounding more and more like that might be a thing that we're going to see at times this season, that they really do want him to be able to have that in his arsenal so he can stretch a defense a little bit more, force a team to guard him more on the perimeter, just keep defenses more honest. And that will be interesting. He was known, I mean, he could shoot the ball in high school. In his Ohio State career, he is 4-for-29 from three. So I don't think he's going to suddenly morph into rivaling Justin for being the team's best three-point shooter. But I've heard Chris Holtman mention him as being like the third or fourth best three-point shooter they've had. So I think as a team, their three-point shooting will not be as great as it was last season, but I think it still has a chance to be good enough that it won't be a hindrance to them. And if Kyle Young can be a part of that, that's going to be big for them. So now we're 4 days into the official, unofficial 2020-2021 Ohio State men's basketball preseason power rankings, which I wish had a catchier, punchier title than that. They've gone in this order so far. At number 14 was walk-on Harrison Hookfin. Number 13, Bucknell transfer Jimmy Sotos. Number 12, freshman Gene Brown III. And number 11, which went on Buckeye Extra here Thursday morning, Zed Key, freshman. And spoiler alert, on Friday, sophomore center Ibrahima Diallo will be number 10. These stories will be running on weekdays, so don't look for them on Saturday or Sunday. I guess I should give you more credit that you understand the difference between a weekday and a weekend. So the next one will pick up again next Monday. They'll run for, like I said, 14 days. So it'll take us into November and get us a little bit closer to the start of the season. I really like doing these because it sort of refreshes me a little bit on maybe some of the ins and outs of who these guys are. I like to try to put in quirky little facts about them. Things that I know from covering them, from having followed their recruitment and things like that, as well as where I think they're going to fit into things this year. And what's interesting putting these rankings together this year is how many unknowns we really have at this point. Because, for example, we don't know whether Jimmy Sotos is going to get a waiver or not. We don't know, like Musa Diallo is still working back from an injury. Seth Towns is still working back from injury. Where do those guys fit in to the power rankings right now? What does the battle look like between Zed Key and Ibrahima Diallo? And I'll be honest, I really struggled between the two of them as far as where I put them. And I probably should have put Zed ahead of Ibrahima with the benefit of hindsight. But I made that decision. I'm going to have to stick to it. Because I have heard a few good things about Ibrahima, but I'll get into him obviously a lot more in Friday's power rankings. So make sure you're checking those out and make sure you visit Buckeye Extra. We'll run, like I said, run through the whole roster. It's a good way to catch up on everybody as we inch our way closer to the season. And I apologize if by, mid-season, these rankings look stupid. If I've got, Jimmy Sotos at 13 and he ends up getting a waiver and he's like a top six player on the roster, yeah, he shouldn't have been 13th in the power rankings. And please feel free to email me and let me know that I missed the boat. But I just think there's a lot. It's an interesting time to try to forecast what this Ohio State roster is going to look like and how some of these guys are going to fit in. So hopefully you're enjoying them. And I'd like to hear your opinions. Please tweet me, email me, whatever. I'm happy to discuss these and hear what you think, because I just think there's a lot of interesting questions about what this team is going to look like. On a much different note, I had a story that ran on Thursday morning about Coach Bob, who was a guy that I knew of, and I knew him from seeing him at Ohio State basketball games, just that he was always behind the Ohio State bench. He clearly knew everybody. Everybody knew him. He was part of just like what it meant to have basketball in Central Ohio. And I found out that he passed away this past Friday and was able to speak with several people close to him and put together a story that I hope does some justice to who he was and to what he meant to Central Ohio, because it's very clear to me in my conversations with people how he was just part of what makes a community a community. He was one of those guys who was just, he was always there. He had his opinions. He had his thoughts. He wasn't afraid to share them. And every person that I talk to has a Coach Bob story, something that he said to them, some encounter that they had, some way that he would interact with them. I liked Justin Arnes telling me how, if he would be going back to the bench, whether he missed a shot, if he was open or not, Coach Bob would be there right behind the bench yelling at him like, "You got to hit that." And Ryan Peden telling me that during warmups or during the starting lineups, he'd often make eye contact with him and you could just feel the intensity coming from the guy. Like it meant so much to him. And there's so many stories. He's a long time AAU coach and mentor and just really had an impact on a lot of kids over the years. Stories about, people's kids would come up to him and it's like, "Hey, Coach Bob. And that, he'd say, "Oh, hey, here's $20. Go to the concession stand. Go get me something. While you're there, get yourself whatever you want too." Like, just like that kind of guy. I feel like anybody who spent enough time in a gym or around a program or around the sport, like, knows people like this. Everybody has somebody like Coach Bob, but nobody else has a Coach Bob. He was unique. He was special. It's going to be very strange not to see him at games. That was one thing multiple people expressed to me, just how weird it's going to be this year. And I think it's very touching that Ohio State is going to leave his seat open this year behind the Ohio State bench. There will be an empty seat where Coach Bob would have sat, because that's how important he was. That's how much he was a part of all this. So thoughts and prayers to Coach Bob's family and friends. And I hope the story did a little bit of justice to his memory. On different notes here, the story that I did tease last week ran earlier this week about how Ohio State went through the process of designing its new uniforms this season. I thought the look at how that all happens, how they work with Nike, what they sort of emphasize, and why they had some of the challenges they did putting this year's uniforms together, I thought it was really interesting. And it's a lot of you have clicked on it and read it, so I very much appreciate that. There's a lot more that I'm not like a jersey aficionado. I know there are people out there that are, and I applaud you for that. That's just not something that's been super high on my priority list in my life. Like, unless a uniform is hideous, and I'm thinking of like recent Columbus Crew jerseys, they call them kits, but with the periwinkle shorts, and those were hideous. I can tell you that definitively, but otherwise most uniforms just kind of look okay to me. I like these uniforms. I think they look sharp. And I thought the whole process of what goes into designing them and making them was really interesting. So hopefully you enjoyed that story. Thank you to everyone who has read that. Also, shout out to Andrew Dockich, who is no longer with the Ohio State program. He has accepted a position as the director of basketball operations at Elon University. So reunited with Mike Schrage, who's the head coach there and was obviously an assistant coach at Ohio State for the first two seasons with Chris Holtmann. So some pre-existing relationships there, but that's going to be a real interesting step forward for Andrew, who has told me like he wasn't sure if coaching was really what he wanted to do. Like, obviously his dad was a coach for a long time, and it sort of runs in the family, but he wasn't certain that that was the path he wanted to take. But he spent the last couple of years now with the Ohio State program as an assistant, not an assistant coach, just program assistant. Now this is sort of a full-time position where he's going to do a lot of things at that program. And this is how guys get started in the field. So very excited for him, interested to see how it goes and sort of then, you know, what the next step and the next step and the next step becomes. And it's interesting just to think about how differently things could have gone for him. I mean, he was set to go to Quinnipiac after he left Michigan, and then that didn't work out, and he ends up at Ohio State, and he plays there and has a very successful season, and then, you know, becomes a graduate assistant, then a program assistant. And now here he is going to Elon University because, well, not just because, but in part because he has a relationship with the coach who was the assistant coach at Ohio State. So it's just funny how these things, how one decision like that can totally alter the trajectory of somebody's career or, you know, where they're going to be headed. So, so good luck to Elon this year. Good luck to Andrew in his new position. And I tease this at the top of the podcast, but I'm getting a new series underway that will likely start sometime next week. So it's been 15 years since a team led by Terrence Dials, Matt Sylvester, Jaquel Foster, J.J. Sullinger ran all the way to a Big Ten championship 1 year before Greg Oden and everybody arrived on campus. And so a few years back, I did a season-long oral history series where I caught up with members of that of the I got to get my years right. The 06-07 team that lost to Florida in the national championship game. I ran a number of stories throughout the year looking back on that team and that season and key moments and key games, and just telling as many interesting behind the scenes stories as I possibly could. Had a lot of fun doing it and realized that I had a great opportunity this season to do it for the 15th anniversary of that team, Thad Matta's second team at Ohio State. So I'm getting that underway. I've already spoken. I've had interviews already with Terrence, with JJ, with Matt Sylvester. I'm working on, I'll have interviews in short order here with Jaquel Foster, with Ron Lewis. It wasn't a big roster that year, and really the rotation ended up being roughly 7 to 8 guys, but I think this is going to be a really fun look back on a team that was picked 8th in the Big Ten and ended up winning it and had a lot on it, like had a pretty significant chip on its shoulder for most of the year. So I hope you enjoy this, and I hope that hope we all have a lot of fun kind of going back down memory lane, because I've already gotten some pretty good stories, and I'm very, very excited to get this rolled out. So look for that. I'm hoping to have the first one run sometime here in the first week of November. There's a chance it could maybe get pushed back a little bit to like the following week, but my goal is to get it out here this first week in November. So please visit Buckeye Extra frequently. So now I'm going to get out of here. As always, you can send along your questions, your comments, your love notes, your hate mail, and otherwise constructive criticism to me at Adam Jardy on Twitter or ajardydispatch.com. Thank you, as always, for listening. Thank you to Patrick Flaherty, the Podfather, for pushing the gears, for helping us get new equipment, and for getting everything going. So thank you again to everyone who is listening, and I will be back next week. So until then, thanks.
The Buckeye Extra Podcast is made possible by Rosati Windows, Central Ohio's number one replacement window company.
sure and subscribe to the Buckeye Extra podcast in the iTunes Store, the Google Play Store, or on Stitcher.